Peace be with you. Welcome to the D Show. I'm Eddie, your host. Subscribe if you haven't already. My next guest is on the front line. I'm trying to save lives because heart disease is a leading killer in America. And you know who's a big fan of his work? That's right, the former President Bill Clinton.
You have conquered your weight. What are you doing? How do you do it? Why can't I do it?
So when you and I had to have our heart operations because of blockage, even, you know, Dr. Esselstyn, who has the most poorly militant position, I mean, he doesn't even eat things made with olive oil. Mm. And he looks great. He's about 10 years older than we are.
What we've heard from President Clinton is the remarkable change that he's been willing to make to remove completely from his nutrition those foods which we know will devastate and injure the inner lining of your arteries.
And when we come back, Dr. Esselstyn will be telling us how heart disease can be cured, how it can be reversed here on The Dean Show. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Dean, this is The Dean Show. This is the Dean Show. This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
This is the Dean Show.
Welcome back to the Dean Show and our special guest, because it's important. We're trying to save lives from the documentary Forks Over Knives.
This could be the first generation of children in the United States that lives less than its parents.
I got two pills I take for my diabetes. Then I got one for cholesterol, high blood pressure. And then I take Byetta, which is an injectable.
Dr. Esselstyn, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Eddie. How are you today?
Good, thank God. I was very impressed. I saw you actually on Forks Over Knives. Have you seen the documentary?
Most certainly.
Yeah, now, I'm looking at a book here. It's called Reversing Heart Disease. Before we get into the book, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, after I finished my tour as a combat surgeon in Vietnam, I was asked to join the staff of the Cleveland Clinic, where I was a general surgeon for 30 years. I was director of the Breast Cancer Task Force and head of the section on thyroid and parathyroid surgery. But it was in my role as a chairman of the Breast Cancer Task Force that I got increasingly disillusioned in the late 1970s, early 80s, with the fact that no matter for how many women I was doing breast surgery, I was doing absolutely nothing for the next unsuspecting victim. And this led to a bit of global research, and it was quite striking to see that breast cancer rates, for example, in Kenya were something like 30 and 40 times less frequent than in the United States. And if you looked at breast cancer in rural Japan in the 1950s, it was very infrequently identified. And yet, as soon as the Japanese women would migrate to the United States by the second and third generation, still pure Japanese American, they now had the same rate of breast cancer as their Caucasian counterpart. And even more provocative, perhaps, was the incidence of prostate cancer in the entire nation of Japan. In 1958, how many autopsy-proven cases were there, from cancer, deaths from cancer of the prostate in Japan? 18, one of the most mind-boggling statistics you've ever seen.
Dr. Esselstyn, can you tell us, for the audience, most people have no idea what heart disease is, what causes heart disease. Can we start from the beginning? Can you tell us what is heart disease?
The leading killer of women and men in Western civilization is coronary artery heart disease. And if the truth be known, this is really nothing more than a toothless paper tiger that need never, ever exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. This is a benign foodborne illness. And I say that because if we look, for instance, at some of the cultures on the planet today, like the rural Chinese, the Papua Highlanders, the Central Africa, or the Tarahumara Indians in northern Mexico, cardiovascular disease is virtually non-existent in these cultures. Why? Because by heritage and tradition, they consume a plant-based type of nutrition. And this is really sort of the guidepost of so much of the the research that we were involved in. With the first, our first small study in 1985, when it was initiated, it started with patients who were absolutely ravaged with heart disease. And we asked them to, in essence, stop the foods that were injuring the lining of their artery every time that passed their lips. I mean, I think all experts in this disease would agree that where this disease has its inception is when we progressively destroy that life jacket and guardian of our blood vessels, which is that single layer of cells that lines the innermost part of our artery, the endothelium. And the endothelial cells manufacture this wonderful magic molecule of gas, nitric oxide.
Nitric oxide protects and prevents all the cellular elements in our bloodstream from ever getting sticky. Our blood flows like Teflon rather than Velcro. Number two, nitric oxide is the strongest vessel dilator in the body. When you climb stairs, the arteries to your heart widen. The arteries to your legs widen and dilate. That's nitric oxide. Number three, nitric oxide protects the wall of the artery from becoming thickened, stiff, or inflamed. It protects us from getting high blood pressure or hypertension. Number four, and this is most important, that an adequate, safe amount of nitric oxide will protect us from ever developing blockages or plaque. So in other words, everyone on the planet who has cardiovascular disease has their disease because they have so sufficiently trashed and injured their endothelial capacity to make nitric oxide. They don't have enough nitric oxide to protect themselves from developing this disease. So what are the foods that every time you pass these foods past your lips, you injure your endothelial cell and decrease the production of nitric oxide? They are oils: olive oil, corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, coconut oil, palm oil, oil in a cracker, oil in a piece of bread, oil in salad dressing. Oil will injure the endothelial cell. Number two, anything with a mother or a face: meat, fish, chicken, fowl, turkey, poultry, will injure endothelial cells, as does dairy, milk, cream, butter, cheese, ice cream, and yogurt. And any excesses of sugar, such as maple syrup, molasses, and honey. And so what we found, interestingly enough, if you do the research going back to the 1950s and look at, sadly, our GIs who died in combat in Korea, you will find that 80% of those 20-year-old GIs had gross evidence of coronary artery disease already. Not enough for their cardiac events yet, but there the disease was already established. Now, on the other hand, if you look at a similar autopsy study now 45 years later in 1999, this time looking at young women and men between the age of 17 and 34, you will find that now the disease is ubiquitous. Everybody has the disease. So what's going on here? Again, not enough at that young age to have their cardiac events. So not surprisingly, if people keep eating these same Western foods and continue to injure, it's not surprising that we as physicians then identify their cardiac events, which begin occurring in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and so on. Now, what we found, actually 30 years ago in our first small group of patients who had serious cardiovascular disease, and they had failed their first or second bypass, and they had failed their first or second angioplasty, or they were too sick for these procedures, they had refused. And we found that when they were instructed to limit their nutrition to whole food, plant-based nutrition, not only could they stop the progression of their disease, but they could also, we would see at times, striking examples of disease reversal.
So are you saying now that you can reverse this heart disease, which, by the way, how many people actually die from heart disease yearly? Do you know the numbers? Is this true? It's one of the is it the leading cause of death every year?
Absolutely. Over 800,000 people will die of heart attacks and strokes every year. Yes.
So are you saying, Dr. Esselstyn, that you don't have to be on 10 different forms of drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, that you can actually reverse this? Because some doctors will say this is a myth, but are you saying this is a fact, that you can reverse it without the drugs and with a plant-based diet?
Well, let's do this. Let's go over the totality of the evidence. I've shared with you already that from an epidemiological standpoint, that there are millions of people who will never develop cardiovascular disease. Now, what we found out 30 years ago is they took these patients who were seriously ill with cardiovascular disease, and by getting them to eat the same type of whole food plant-based diet that we see in those nations where the disease is not present, not only could they stop their disease, but often you'd see striking examples of disease reversal. Dr. Ornish, my colleague and friend, was a pioneer at this and published studies before we did. And there are increasingly, is there an awareness of the fact that this is a benign foodborne illness. I've often said that coronary artery disease is a toothless paper tiger that need never, ever exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. This is a completely benign foodborne illness. For example, we just reported another paper last year of some 198 patients where there was a adherence rate of our program of close to 90%, 89%. Of those patients who adhered to the program, over the next 3.75 years, there was one major cardiac event. One patient had a stroke. That's 99.4% avoided any further cardiovascular events. And these were patients who had severe triple vessel coronary artery disease. Now, when I say reversal, I think it's important to recognize that what most people will think about is the blockages that occur in the major coronary arteries. And yes, you can see sometimes striking example of reversal of that. But there are patients who are in their 50s and 60s and so forth who will have plaque that is made up of scar, fibrosis, and calcification, that even though that will never reverse, these patients, interestingly enough, can reverse their stress test, can reverse their disease on a PET scan, meaning that they can get practically normal flow back to the heart muscle without reversing that that plaque in the major artery. In addition to that, there may be disease in the legs. There may be disease in the carotid artery going to the brain. You can see reversal in that artery to the brain with ultrasound. In the leg, you can see the transition when you measure the difference in pulse volume. And then there are multiple symptoms that will change as these patients reverse their disease. They will escape their angina, their chest pain. They will get rid of their claudication or pain in the calf muscle if it is due to disease in an extremity. Or they will actually reverse their erectile dysfunction.
We're here with Dr. Esselstyn. We're going to take a break. We're here trying to save some lives, man on the front line, trying to cut this statistic down because it is a leading killer, heart disease. We'll be right back with more. Don't go anywhere.
I want you to imagine you wake up and in front of you are a bunch of guys running around kicking a ball. No goals, no lines, no rules. What would you think? But is that your life? Surely every sport has its goal. Every game has its end. It has its objective. It has its rules. How about life? How about our life? Isn't there a goal to life? Isn't there a purpose, an objective that we have to reach? We think so. The Quran tells us that we exist in order to worship God. And worshiping God means knowing God, as the Quran says. وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. Worship, though, is not some narrow, small thing. It's wide, it's vast, it encompasses everything that the human being does. Everything that you do, everything that you think, everything that you feel can be done, thought, said, felt in a way that is either pleasing or displeasing to God. The purpose of life is to try and do everything in a way that God loves and God is pleased with. That is your goal.
Please subscribe to The Dean Show. Follow us on our official Facebook and Twitter pages in the links below. Please also help support The Dean Show by making a donation in the link below.
Back here on The Dean Show with Dr. Esselstyn. Sir, we saw now on the movie that you were in, the film, that actually the people, they were written off by their doctors, that basically they were going to die. And is it true that they were, it shows as in the film, that they were actually taken off the prescription drugs, they actually ended up living, and all through this, the natural way, through this changing up their eating diet and going more on a plant-based diet. Is this right?
Well, that's true. The patients that were seen in the film had had a very gratifying response. They were people who totally bought into the whole concept of whole food plant-based nutrition, and they actually were delighted and proud to be a part of it. But as soon as they start losing their chest pain, they lose weight, they see that their disease is reversing, I mean, you've got them hooked. It is it's incredible to think that something as simple as nutrition could be so absolutely powerful. I mean, the trouble with most physicians who treat cardiovascular disease is not only are they caring, they're compassionate, and they have an enormous fund of knowledge, but no time in their training were they ever exposed to the power of nutrition. They don't understand nutrition. They never get training in it. They don't get training in behavioral modification. So it's very difficult for them to embrace it. But one of the things that we have found increasingly is that many younger cardiologists who are willing to take a look at this have absolutely embraced it and have done wonderful things with their patients as they begin to teach them the power of plant-based nutrition. What are the foods that they must avoid? What are the foods that will restore their healthy vasculature?
My uncle, he's a medical doctor. He knows about you. He's a fan of your work, and he's on board. And I got to talk to him a little bit about this, about most of the doctors not embracing more of this natural plant-based remedies for healing. But he had seemed to have said that, you know, we do what we know, and most of them have no clue about nutrition. So what do you do? He's actually on board now. He's he actually has the book. He's referring patients to change up their diet. And what do you actually do when you encounter people in the medical profession? Because we want to get them on board.
Well, that's right. As I have often said in my presentation, as regards those who are specialists in cardiovascular medicine, it really is possible for the best to be even better. And what we do is that over the last 5 years, once a month I conduct an intensive counseling seminar, 5.5 hours, for patients who do have cardiovascular disease. And during that time, these patients are going to learn exactly what they did to create the disease in the first place, and precisely how they can become empowered as the locus of control to halt and to reverse their disease. And at the same time, everybody who attends is going to receive a very hefty notebook that has every one of my PowerPoint slides that I will have used, several of our peer-reviewed scientific articles, because when you think about it, what really is going to make this transition powerful and inescapable is the absolute science of this approach. They also get a 44-page handout with many additional recipes that add to the 240, which are in the two books that we include. And also, there's a marvelous hour and a quarter presentation from a wonderful woman who's had 30 years experience acquiring and preparing plant-based foods, dealing with reading ingredients and dealing with travel and restaurants. And then everybody receives a DVD of the entire 5.5-hour seminar, so that if they get home and forgetful, they can clip this on and get themselves back up to speed. And then we always have three local or regional participants who previously had a successful experience share their story, so that those in attendance can say to themselves, listen, if he or she can do this, I can do this. And then we have time for answering questions, and then we stay in touch as necessary, either through email or phone call. Now, the interesting thing is, getting back to the getting other physicians to become familiar with this. In the last 5 years, we've had 125 physicians attend our course because they were interested in what we were doing, and it's very gratifying to see some of them begin to incorporate this in their own practice.
Doesn't this go back to the statement, I'm sure you're familiar with, Hippocrates, who said, let food be your medicine and medicine be your food?
Sounds pretty good.
Tell us about your personal, let us just for a moment get into your one day with Dr. Esselstyn. When you wake up in the morning, what do you eat? How many times a day do you eat? Some of your entrees that you have throughout the day. Can you please fill us in?
Well, actually, telling you what I eat would be better to have my wife say a word or two. But the cereal I love in the morning is, I love old-fashioned oats. And I don't like to cook them. I use them, eat them as a dry cereal, pour them in the bowl, then add some raisins and a banana for some sweetness. And then I like to add raspberries, blueberries, and strawberries. And I particularly like to wet it down with oat milk. And I find that's very delicious, and it carries me very well till 12:30, 1 o'clock, when I may have lunch. What is lunch? Lunch is frequently a sandwich, which is a Mestemacher type of rye bread with a hummus spread on it, and then some cut up scallions or cilantro or some kale that has been cooked 5.5 minutes, so it was nice and tender, and then maybe anointed with some lemon juice. Wow. And then on top of that will be an enormous slice of tomato, so I have an open sandwich, and on top of the tomato I'll have some a tasteful balsamic vinegar, and several of those hold me nicely for lunch. Then for supper, I would have to say that the all-time favorite and the meal that I first encountered in Puerto Rico over 31 years ago when we were transitioning was old-fashioned beans and rice. Beans and rice with some cut-up scallions, cut-up peppers, cut-up tomatoes, peas, corn, and maybe some water chestnuts. And on top of that, you can anoint it with either tamari or some salsa. And you've got an absolute feast.
Now, we hear right now former President Clinton saying...
Even, you know, Dr. Esselstyn, who has the most poorly militant position, I mean, he doesn't even eat things made with olive oil. Mm. And he looks great. He's about 10 years older than we are. But he has a piece of chocolate every New Year's Eve.
That you fudge once a year, is that right?
Oh, you don't want to get into that. Yes, on New Year's Eve, I commit to a Reese peanut butter cup.
All right.
You're going to allow me that one.
Okay, back with more with Dr. Esselstyn. Don't go anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard flight 5235 nonstop to London Heathrow. The temperature is 25 degrees outside, and we are expecting a fairly smooth flight today. In a few moments, the flight attendants will be passing around the cabin to offer you hot and cold drinks. We thank you for choosing to fly with us today, and we hope you enjoy your flight.
Thank God it was just a dream.
God? I don't believe in God.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign.
Please subscribe to The Dean Show. Follow us on our official Facebook and Twitter pages in the links below. Please also help support The Dean Show by making a donation in the link below.
Back on The Dean Show with Dr. Esselstyn here. We're trying to cut that. Now, you said it's 800,000 people die from heart disease yearly?
No, I said 800,000 people die from cardiovascular disease. That includes strokes and heart attacks.
Now, heart disease is somewhat of a silent killer. It can creep up and get you, and you can just, you're lucky if you get a second chance. Is that right?
Well, there's no question that heart disease can be very subtle at times. Patients may not have anything in the way of symptoms with a plaque that is blocking their artery by no more than 30 or 40%. And if, sadly, that plaque should rupture, and then suddenly the body tries to mend that rupture by laying down a clot, now suddenly a vessel which was 30% blocked is now 100% blocked, and that means that all the downstream heart muscle is suddenly deprived of oxygen and nutrients, and it dies, and that's the heart attack. And sometimes these heart attacks can result in what we call a cardiac arrhythmia, where the heart goes into a ventricular rhythm, which will lead to fibrillation or a standstill, which is fatal.
Is it true you actually, after this operation, where you take, what is it, the vein from the leg, you put it inside, you open up the chest, and you do the bypass surgery, you haven't still fixed the problem, have you? It's a temporary solution?
Even cardiovascular surgeons are the first to admit that, just like cardiologists who are doing stents, look, they don't do a thing for the causation of the illness. And there is study after study after study that clearly shows that if you are having a stent while you're in the middle of a heart attack, the stent can be absolutely life-saving. Save a lot of your heart muscle from damage, your life. However, what about the other 90% that are having what we call elective stent? With elective stents, when you're stent just because you've got some chest pains or you've made all the stress tests, there is no prolongation of, and there is no protection from a future heart attack.
And thank you, Dr. Esselstyn, for being with us here on The Dean Show. Forgive us for the technical difficulties. And get the book, Preventing Reversing Heart Disease. You know what? It is a serious matter. You have this leading killer killing too many people. And we can go ahead and fight this by fighting our urges to eat the wrong foods and changing our ways and eating the right foods. And God willing, with God's help, we can go ahead and take advantage of all the wonderful, beautiful foods that are out there. All of the green, beautiful vegetables, the fruits, and getting away from all this junk that's out there. And when you put junk in, what do you get? Junk out. So God willing, you can go ahead and make these modifications, these adjustments in our lives, so we can go ahead and live a more fruitful, well-balanced life. We'll see you next time here on The Dean Show. Until then, subscribe if you haven't already. Peace be with you.
There's no question that if the truth were known that coronary artery disease is a toothless paper tiger that need never exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. What we've heard from President Clinton is the remarkable change that he's been willing to make to remove completely from his nutrition those foods which we know will devastate and injure the inner lining of your arteries. And the remarkable thing is the capacity that the body has to heal itself. And when you do what President Clinton has done, will you completely try to remove any foods that are going to injure your vessel? The body has this remarkable capacity to begin to heal itself. And I'm afraid that as a medical profession, we perhaps have fallen down and really emphasized too much the drugs and the procedures and the operations, which really treat the symptoms. They do not treat the causation of this illness. All right. This is one of the few times since Hippocrates that we have not told patients about the causation of their illness.